Here on the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour, here on the second Friday of January, we reconvene with Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star at IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman on the Twitterverse. Support your local journalists. Wow, look at that. Kalen DeBoer from Indiana to Alabama head coach, BCS championship game. Well, that's been a crazy four-year Olympic World Cup cycle, huh?
Yeah. I mean, listen, all the dude's ever done is win. I mean, that's, you know, there's replacing the legend is maybe the hardest thing to do in you know, college sports. I would argue less so in the NFL for a variety of reasons, but
you never want to follow the legend, do you?
You don't. But at the same time, if you're Kalen DeBoer, you can't turn that job down. My impression of DeBoer as somebody who has won everywhere he's been as a head coach, who's coached at virtually every level of the sport, is that he is confidently his own man, and that he's not, you know, I don't know if I should tell the story or not. I guess I will. When Indiana hired DeBoer in, I guess that would have been like the winter of 2018 into 2019. I think he may have officially been hired in early mid-January. There was a lot of smoke blowing in the direction of Matt Canada, who obviously was at Indiana for a time, from New Palestine, kind of been everywhere in college and the NFL. And, you know, I hesitate to go crazy with these things because I'm a reporter and I don't want to just, you know, peddle in rumor. But what I heard was there was a hang up on basically how many of there was a hang up in Canada sort of saying he wanted to bring at least a couple of assistants with him, which isn't uncommon, you know, when you hire a new coordinator, and Indiana saying, well, we've kind of got all these spots filled and we really don't intend to fire anybody. And whether it was that, whether that was true, whether something else caused Indiana to pivot, whether the Matt Canada stuff was always more smoke than fire. When Indiana pivoted to Kalen DeBoer, he just said, sure, you know, I'll work with whoever's there. and it's funny now to think about, for example, the fact that, you know, he's basically Nick Sheridan is now at the, you know, one of the roots of the Kalen DeBoer tree, if you want to say. You know, DeBoer didn't demand to bring other guys with him. He just worked with the guys that were there. He built a really successful offense across 1 year at Indiana, went back to Fresno State, won 9 games in his second season. I think I saw a statistic bouncing around Alabama Twitter that he's never lost a home game as a head coach.
Wow.
In front of fans. I think he lost some home games during the COVID season, but he's never lost a home game in front of fans as a head coach. And obviously, you know, what he did at Washington kind of speaks for itself. And I mean, I don't think Alabama can make a better hire. And, you know, quietly, if you ask my opinion, I'd say he was a better hire than Mike Norvell. I would say he might well be a better hire than Steve Sarkisian. It's going to be damn near impossible to replace a legend, but I just suspect he's got the temperament to do well enough in that job, as well as anybody can be.
The pressure at Alabama is on a level of ridiculousness. If 10 is ridiculous, where is it at Alabama from the fan base? 40? 319? 2 million?
Well, I mean, it's funny because the thing about Alabama is, on the one hand, listen, they spent 25 years in the wilderness, you know.
Yeah, generation. IU basketball fans can tell you all about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I were talking about this last night before you know, before the DeBoer stuff came up. But, like, you look at, for example, Gene Stallings is, you know, between Bear Bryant and Nick Saban, far and away the most successful coach Alabama had. He had an 11-win season, a 13-0 season where he won a national title, another 12-win season. He retired in 96. And then Alabama pivoted to Mike DeBose, who had a couple good years, and then things kind of fell apart in the face of a recruiting scandal. You know, they pivoted, I think to Dennis Franchione at that point, who never really got it going. There was the Mike Riley fiasco. And then they brought in Mike Shula, you know, frankly, I think as much as anything, probably as a an alumnus, you know, sort of there to maybe ride out the NCAA sanctions. You know, they, I mean, Alabama spent a lot of time stumbling around looking for answers. You know, post Bear Bryant, there was, I think it was it Ray Vincent and then Bill Curry. And
Ray Perkins, but yes.
Ray Perkins, thank you, not Ray Vincent, Ray Perkins. You know, and it's not, there is no foolproof job, and that one certainly is it. On the other hand, it's the best job in that conference, you know, by measure. I mean, I would argue it's even better than Georgia, or at worst, it's equal to Georgia. And you're bringing in a head coach who, you know, isn't going to, I don't think is going to feel like he's got to do it someone else's way. He's got to measure up to what, I mean, like it's a different level, obviously, but Kalen DeBoer can stand there and say, listen, my process won national titles at my alma mater down in the lower levels. It made my offenses work everywhere I went. And I remember something we talked a lot about when Indiana hired him was that DeBoer, you know, DeBoer really did not go through easy jobs. He went to Southern Illinois. He went to Eastern Michigan. He went to Fresno State. He went to Indiana. And everywhere he went, winning followed, improvement followed, success followed. And then when you look at it, you know, he returns to head coaching. He's got the one COVID year at Fresno State, but then he goes 9-3. Then he goes to Washington and turns him into a, you know, a monster practically overnight. You can't guarantee anything. I will say this too. And again, I don't want to speak too far out of school. You know, this year, obviously, there's been a lot of attention from Bloomington on Seattle and Michael Penix and Kalen DeBoer and a lot of people wishing both of them well, Nick Sheridan well, et cetera. More than one person around IU football, you know, told me back during the season, they said Michael Penix is an outstanding player. He deserves all the credit he's getting. He's a, you know, he deserves to be a Heisman candidate, all that. But the sauce is DeBoer. You know, DeBoer is what makes it work. His offense, his coaching methods, his temperament, the way he sees the game, the way he teaches the game.
And his record reflects that over the last however many years, as you pointed
right,
out.
Right. I mean, he has 12 losses in 9 years as a head coach.
That's ridiculous.
That's I don't, you know, I don't care where you're doing it. Like, there's never been a moment where he stepped, you know, he went from Sioux Falls, where he won everything all the time, to starting at FCS as a coordinator and having success there. And then he went up to
Eastern Michigan. Nobody, you know, wins
the,
there.
Yeah, he went up to the MAC, one of the toughest jobs in the MAC. He had success there. He went out to Fresno State and rebuilt Fresno State with Jeff Tedford. He went to Indiana, which obviously is not the easiest job in the world. He had success there. Then he went back into head coaching at Fresno State, and he was almost immediately successful once the playing field was level. Then he went to Washington and turned Washington into a national runner-up. There's never been a moment in his career where the job, the task, the challenge was too big for him. And I don't think, while he's not like an arrogant man by any means, if you spend time around him, he is confident. He just sort of says, this is what I do. It works. We're fine. I just don't think he's going to walk in there feeling like he's got to fight off the ghosts of somebody else's past. He's just going to say, this is my process. This is how I do it. And I'm confident it works because I've done it many times. So, you know, stick with me and it will be fine.
And no offense to Washington, and I don't mean any in this direction, but he'll have better players at Alabama. And that's not a knock. Washington was really good the last couple of years. I know they had a bunch of six-year guys this time around. But Alabama can wave their magic wand, Mr. Osterman, and get just about anybody they would like. And the support staff, the analytics, the analysts, the guys that Saban used to bring, they have money that is almost unlimited in football. So a great way to go. And right, following the legend doesn't always work. It's not guaranteed for anything, but there's not a lot of holes to poke in this resume.
No, there's not. I mean, it really is just like, and again, I guess the other thing you'd say about that resume is, you know, that there was a fair bit of this in the build up to the national title game of look how, geez, Kalen DeBoer has climbed so far so fast. Well, maybe we should ask ourselves why. you know, because everywhere he went, there what he had success. Everywhere he went, he, you know, again, from Sioux Falls, he was OC at Sioux Falls. I'm just looking at his resume now. He was OC at Sioux Falls. And then he was the head coach at Sioux Falls. He was offensive coordinator at Southern Illinois for 3 years, Eastern Michigan for 2 years, Fresno State for 2 years, Indiana for 1 year. Then he gets the Fresno State head job. He's only there 2 years, one real year, frankly, let's be honest. And then he goes to Washington. You know, ask yourself why it is that a guy rises that fast. It's because everywhere he goes, you know,
turns to gold.
Success follows. Everywhere he goes, everything gets better, you know.
And the paycheck will get better as well down there in Tuscaloosa. I don't think we've seen any details yet. That's usually the last thing to come out, but that's they've got plenty. They'll take a pay cut, too. They're not going to pay them what they paid Saban, that's for sure. So they're going to get a great coach and a cheaper deal. Well, the rich do get richer sometimes, don't they? That is interesting. So big story, Kalen DeBoer, former Indiana offensive coordinator. Runner-up, Washington Huskies, now is the new coach at Alabama, replacing Nick Saban. We got hoops tonight right around the corner. Do we have hoops? And we got to get Zach over to the Simon Scott Assembly Hall for the surprise Minnesota Golden Gophers taking on the Indiana men's basketball program tonight. 6:30 Fox Sports 1. Well, I think this is good news that Minnesota has won seven straight or whatever it is. And seven straight. And then they're 3-1 in the league or whatever that record is. Why? Well, it's going to get Indiana's full attention. Not that Indiana needs superlatives to get full attention, but that's better for me because 0-3 Rutgers didn't get the full attention. So maybe the Golden Gophers at home on a rainy, weirdo Friday night college sports. What do you got to do tonight? What do we expect in the rational department? Is this a night where Indiana decides to rebound better, or is that just something we're going to have to live with? The turnovers we talked about yesterday, 3 of the last 4 games, 18 or more. The one game was the exception at home with just 4 turnovers. What is tonight about for this basketball program? You can't look ahead to Purdue if you can't knock off Rutgers.
No, I mean, I think you and I talked a little bit about this yesterday. I mean, Indiana's just got to find some consistency right now. Like, I told this story. Our good mutual friend Jim Coyle has me on a show on Friday mornings, too. And I told this story on Jim's show this morning. I was an intern in 2008. We were covering I was covering the Nationals. They were very bad. That was the year that they secured the #1 overall pick that turned into Steven Strasburg. And they really struggled pretty much in every department. And I remember, including hitting, and I remember a post-game interview with Dimitri Young, the colorful ex-red,
ex-cardinal,
ex-tiger. And he was on that Tigers team that set the record for fewest wins in a regular season. And somebody asked him, they said, you know, you've been a part of a team that struggled like this. Is there really nothing you can do? You know, is there nothing else you can do except just kind of keep coming back and keep coming back and keep coming back? And he said, no, you know, you've got to get in the cages. You've got to study your scouting reports. You've got to be ready for your pitchers. You just got to find those consistent habits that lead to improvement and lead to winning. And somebody said, so there's no magic formula. And Dimitri, who was always a bit, you know, always had a good sense of humor, just paused for a beat. And he said, well, I guess Bud Selig kind of ruined all that, didn't he? And obviously he was referring to baseball's, at that point, fairly recent changes around performance-enhancing drug testing. But his, you know, the undercurrent point was, no, there's not. That, you know, there's the in sports, if there was some, you know, way to guarantee yourself that Hollywood moment we talked about last night where everybody meets in a darkened gym and clears the air and rallies together and suddenly, you know, here's the 3-minute montage of lots of layups and dunks and threes and wins and cheerleaders cheering and parents clapping and, you know, friends hugging and whatever else, people would do it. All you can do is just keep hammering away until you try to find something or some things that underpin a certain measure of consistency. And that's not going to start anywhere better than at home, frankly. And it's not going to start unless you do take every opponent seriously. Listen, Minnesota's won 7 games in a row. Minnesota is 22nd in the country in field goal percentage, effective field goal percentage. Minnesota is 42nd in the country in opponent effective field goal percentage. One thing that jumps off the page to me, given we've already seen Indiana play the number one team in the country in this statistic, Minnesota is number 2 in the country in assists as a percentage of made field goals. Minnesota shares the ball really well. Number 1 in that particular statistic, unless something has changed, and it has not, is Kansas. Minnesota is a good team. Minnesota can score points when it needs to. You look back to that Nebraska game. They were down 39-22 in the first half at home, but they also won the game 76-65. What does that tell you? This is not the Minnesota that the Big Ten has become accustomed to in the last few years. It is a better team. It is a more balanced team. I would argue it is a substantially more dangerous team. And I also suspect it is a team that will look at this game, and I recognize that Indiana, whether it's the record, the rankings, the computers, whatever, I recognize this isn't necessarily an Indiana team that's the biggest scalp to claim. But I suspect Minnesota's 3 wins so far this season were in the Big Ten, were Nebraska at home in December, a win at Michigan on the 4th, and a win Sunday at Maryland. They've had the whole week off. It's still Indiana at Indiana, and I think Minnesota will look at this game and will say this is a chance to make a statement. That wherever Indiana is in its process or its journey, if we go to Indiana and win at Indiana, the league can't not recognize that, can't not see that for, what it is, essentially. And so I think Indiana's also got to be ready to kind of be painted as a target tonight from Minnesota. And I just think, forget looking ahead to Purdue or not looking ahead to Purdue. Like, I just think Indiana's got to be ready for the idea that wherever they are in the net, and I think I want to say Minnesota's in the 80s, so like this isn't even a quad 2 win at the moment, but Indiana's got to be ready for a scrap tonight because I think they're going to get one.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, checking in here on a big show Friday. Hoosiers go for 6:30, Fox Sports 1, Lisa Byington, and more Stephen Bardo. How can we just – what lottery did we win? Well, I'm not sure if we've won anything there. Another number I saw, Minnesota's really good on the offensive glass, and we've highlighted Indiana's struggles there. What other convincing do we need besides putting those numbers up in front of the guys that are getting minutes and say, how about everybody rebound? I don't think this leak out for one dunk a game is worth 12 offensive rebounds. That theory has to change, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's guys trying to cheat for things. I also wonder, frankly, too, if, I mean, like,
the blow buys
really
on 3-point shots.
When Indiana plays these bigger lineups, that just means that naturally, when the shot goes up, more players are instinctively going to think they need to gravitate toward the rim. And it's not breaking news to say that, frankly, whether it's skill, whether it's teaching, whatever it is, Indiana's guards have not rebounded very well in the last few years. And that includes, the one area where Indiana is fairly experienced is you've got your Xavier Johnsons, your Trey Galloways, obviously a little bit more lately your Anthony Leals. These guys aren't new to this, and there's never really been a time in their careers when they were, at least their Indiana careers, when they were particularly prolific rebounders. Like, for example, I'm looking at Trey Galloway. His defensive rebounding percentage right now is 4.4 defensive rebound rate. Last year was better. It was 9.2. The year before that, it was 7.5. Let's rewind to some Indiana players of yesteryear, I suppose. Robert Johnson's defensive rebounding rate his senior year was 14.7. 15 the year before that, 13.4 the year before that. He was, among other things, a very good defensive rebounder. Yogi Ferrell, not as good, but in 4 years, Yogi Ferrell's lowest defensive rebounding rate as a guard was 8.6. So even a guy that's 5'11", 6 foot, is not necessarily going to be clearing the boards a lot, is still hitting the boards, the defensive glass, at a level that, just to be honest, like when you look at, for example, Trey Galloway, Galloway's never really done consistently. Now, the player that has done it before is Xavier Johnson. And if you can find a way to get Xavier Johnson a little bit more engaged on the glass, and that's where maybe your point about sacrificing a few more runouts, a few more leak out plays, maybe that's necessary. He's been better at that. But again, you know, that's not necessarily a strength of CJ Gunn's statistically. It's not necessarily a strength, obviously, of Gabe Kupp statistically, although he is right now at 10.1% defensive rebound rate. So he's better than anybody else in the backcourt at pulling in defensive rebounds. Indiana's just it's kind of one of those where I think some of it is actually lineups, not just because teams are shooting over Indiana looking for long caroms, but also because Indiana's got a lot of players on the floor that do tend to just sort of think instinctively, I'm big, I'm long, I crash the glass here. Indiana's got to get more from its guards if it's going to do that. There's just no way around it.
Everybody's got to contribute. There's no way to dance around that. Purdue's here on Tuesday. Minnesota tonight, 6:30, Fox Sports 1. Any word on the Derek Queen front? I saw some rumblings on Twitter earlier today. Do you know anything about the Montverde forward who had Indiana in his last two or three? I know we've put this off. Is that even something to worry about here on a game night?
Yeah, so I don't... I'll search Twitter because he was expected potentially to decide this weekend.
He's moved that date multiple times already, hasn't he?
He has. This weekend they were in Springfield for Hoop Hall. There's an annual, a big time annual tournament out in Springfield, Massachusetts, called the Hoop Hall Classic or the Hoop Hall something. Basketball Classic. I forget what the exact term is. It had been suggested for a while after we got the other side of the November signing window that Queen was targeting Hoop Hall. Now it seems like that may not be the case anymore, and we may be pushing it back again. And, you know, people say, well, what does that mean? Does it mean that he's not, you know, does it mean he's not considering Maryland anymore? Does this mean he's not considering Indiana anymore? Who knows? Guys, there can be all sorts of different reasons. Guys, push things back, but I don't get the sense that's going to happen this weekend unless something has changed there that I'm unaware of.
Yeah, it's been a mess from the get-go, so just wanted to clear any of that up. All right, stay warm this weekend, my friend. We'll get caught up with you next week after the homestand with Minnesota and Purdue before the Hoosiers. A week from tonight, head to the House of Horrors, the Kohl Center in lovely Madison. So you'll go from freezing here to freezing there. All right. That's another Friday night game. It's next Friday at 8:30 on Fox Sports 1. Thanks so much for your time, buddy. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always, Glenn.
That's Zach Osterman, the Indy Star beat writer for Indiana basketball, at Zach Osterman on the Twitterverse and IndyStar.com. Please support local journalism. We have Osterman and Jim Gordello each week to help tell the stories of all the things making news in the world of sports. And speaking of high school hoops, we will send it to Joe Smith and Dave Novak at 6:55 this evening. Edgewood, Owen Valley from Patriot Hall over in Spencer, our second Friday night of January in the new year, our second rivalry game. And if it's anything close to what we had for you with North and South last Friday night, you are in for a treat again. Coverage, internet or on air, starts at 6:55. We'll tip it about 20 minutes after the conclusion of the girls' varsity game. Yep, girls, boys, doubleheader tonight over in Owen County. Thanks for tuning in. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. Big show Friday. Don't forget, we've got NFL Wildcard Saturday, tomorrow afternoon starting at 4, triple header on Sunday, and we will be back with you on a Martin Luther King holiday Monday. Have a great Friday night. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour is over.